Let's start out with a reading from Torah. I'm going to start with the reading of Deuteronomy 6. Deuteronomy 6, it says, "Now this is the commandment, the statutes and the judgments which Yahweh your Elohim has commanded you to teach, that you might do them in the land where you are going over to possess it, so that you and your sons and your grandson might fear Yahweh your Elohim, to keep all his statutes and his commandments which I command you all the days of your life, and that your days may be prolonged. O Israel, you should listen and be careful to do it, that it may be well with you, and that you may multiply greatly, just as Yahweh, the Elohim of your fathers, has promised you, in a land flowing with milk and honey. Hear, O Israel, Yahweh is our Elohim. Yahweh is one. You shall love Yahweh your Elohim with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your might. These words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart, and you shall teach them diligently to your sons, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as a frontal on your forehead. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. Then it shall come about when Yahweh your Elohim brings you into the land which he swore to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, to give you, and great and splendid cities which you did not build, and houses full of all good things which you did not fill, and hewn cisterns which you did not dig, vineyards and olive trees which you did not plant, and you eat and are satisfied. Then watch yourself that you do not forget Yahweh who brought you from the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall fear only Yahweh your Elohim, and you shall worship him and swear by his name. You shall not follow other Elohim, any of the Elohim of the peoples who surround you. For Yahweh your Elohim in the midst of you is a jealous Elohim. Otherwise, the anger of Yahweh your Elohim will be kindled against you, and he will wipe you off the face of the earth. You shall not put Yahweh your Elohim to the test, as you tested him at Massah." If anybody doesn't remember that, see Exodus 17, 1 through 7. "You should diligently keep the commandments of Yahweh your Elohim, and his testimonies and his statutes, which he has commanded you. You shall do what is right and good in the sight of Yahweh, that it may be well with you, and that you may go in and possess the good land which Yahweh swore to give to your fathers by driving out all your enemies from before you, as Yahweh has spoken. When your son asks you in time to come, saying, 'What do the testimonies and the statutes and judgments mean, which Yahweh our Elohim commanded you?' Then you shall say to your son, 'We were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt, and Yahweh brought us from Egypt with a mighty hand. Moreover, Yahweh showed great and distressing signs and wonders before our eyes against Egypt, Pharaoh, and all his household. He brought us out from there in order to bring us in, to give us the land which he had sworn to our fathers. So Yahweh commanded us to observe all these statutes, to fear Yahweh our Elohim for our good always, and for our survival as it is today. It will be righteousness for us if we are careful to observe this commandment before Yahweh our Elohim, just as he commanded us. It's not typically something we read at Shavuot, but it's good to remember. It's good to read the whole of that text and remember what Moshe said to the people, so that we can be consistent with keeping the commandments. So, Chag Shavuot Sameach, happy feast of Shavuot. Let's look real quick to Leviticus 23:14 through 19. Where it says, three times a year you shall celebrate a feast to me. You shall observe the feast of unleavened bread. For 7 days you are to eat unleavened bread as I commanded you, and the appointed time in the month Abib, for in it you came out of Egypt. And none shall appear before me empty-handed. Also you shall observe the feast of the harvest of the first fruits of your labors from what you sow in the field. Also the feast of the ingathering at the end of the year when you gather in the fruit of your labors from the field. Three times a year all your males shall appear before Yahweh Elohim. You shall not offer the blood of my sacrifice with leavened bread, nor is the fat of my feast to remain overnight until morning. You shall bring the choice first fruits of your soil into the house of Yahweh your Elohim, and you are not to boil a young goat in the milk of its mother. Three times a year, huh? Three times a year. Greeting for Matzos, Shavuot, and Sukkot is Chag, C-H-A-G, or Het Gimel in Hebrew. And Het Gimel, or Chag, typically is translated now as feast. You know, it's have a good feast, have a happy feast. You know, and it's used in other contexts. You know, our Jewish friends will say Chag, Hanukkah, Sameach, or Chag, Purim, Sameach. They like to, you know, say happy, happy feast. The origin of the word Het Gimel, Chag, is a little deeper than that. It has a very specific meaning. It means a feast, but it means a pilgrimage festival. It's very specific. And if you use it properly, it's only used during Matzos, Shavuot, and Sukkot to commemorate the pilgrimage feast where you're required to go. Incidentally, it has an Arabic equivalent word. Hag in Arabic is Hajj. That's the Hajj, that the pilgrimage that all of the Muslims go to Mecca, and march around that big black box, and they take it seriously. That's the only time they use the term Hajj. That's known as the Hajj to them. So maybe we should consider the greeting. I know most of us don't speak Hebrew, but when we do, let's consider the definition of those words. Don't boil a kid in its mother's milk. How did that get in there? Yeah. Is that prohibition against cheeseburgers? Well, some rabbis say it is. Don't do that. In fact, they have rules about that. You know, you have to wait at least 2 hours between eating meat and cheese. You know, I think how it got in there is we're talking about feast days. We're talking about offerings. We're talking about going into the land that is being given to them. And the prohibition is a condemnation of offering, you know, giving offerings the way that the other nations do. Because there is a practice among some of the other nations of making an offering to their Elohim, small e, by boiling a kid in its mother's milk. What a horrible sight, but that was it. So it's a prohibition about doing things the way that the other people do. Let's do things the way Yahweh wants us to do. So go back to the 10th day of the third month, 5777, or June 4th, 2017, whatever. Shavuot means 50 in Hebrew. 50 what? Well, we count the Omer. And count the Omer. There are prayers to go along with that. Whenever you count the Omer every evening, you count one Omer, two Omer, and you go and you know, there are prayers. There's Baruch Atah Yahweh Eloheinu Melech Ha'olam Asher Kidshanu B'Mitzvotav Vetzivanu Al Seferat Ha'omer. Blessed are you, Yahweh, King of the universe, who has sanctified us with his commandments and commanded us concerning the counting of the Omer. Wow. We get to count the Omer to 50. Can we count to 50? Well, what's an Omer? Well, we go to the source of all knowledge, Wikipedia. And we find that the Omer is Hebrew, is an ancient Israelite unit of measure, dry measure, used in the era of the temple in Jerusalem. It's used in the Bible as an ancient unit of volume for grains and dry commodities. And the Torah mentions as being equal to 1/10 of an ephah. According to the Jewish Encyclopedia, 1906, an ephah was defined as being 72 logs, and the log was equal to the Sumerian mina, which was itself defined as 1/60 of a meris. I know that means a whole lot to everybody. The Omer was thus equal to about 12/100 of a meris. The meris was defined as being the quantity of water equal in weight to a light royal talent, and was thus equal to about 30.3 liters, making the Omer equal to about 3.64 liters. The Jewish Study Bible 2014, however, places the Omer at about 2.3 liters. in traditional Jewish standards of measurement, the omer was equivalent to the capacity of 43.2 eggs. Eggs. You know, cackle fruit, hen's eggs. Or what is known as 1/10 of an ephah. 3 siyas. And in dry weight, the omer weighs between 1.56 kilograms to 1.77 kilograms, being the quantity of flour required to separate therefrom the dough offering. So, we now know what an omer is. Oh, wait, there's more. Maybe something a little more appropriate. The word omer is sometimes translated as sheaf. Specifically, an amount of grain large enough to require bundling. The biblical episode of the manna describes Yahweh as instructing the Israelites to collect an omer for each person in your tent, implying that each person could eat an omer of manna a day. In the instructions of Moshe, the main significance of the omer is the traditional offering of an omer of barley on the day after the Sabbath, or according to the Pharisees and the rabbinical view, on the second day of Passover during the Feast of Unleavened Bread. During the period of temple sacrifice, as well as the tradition of counting the Omer, the Sefirat HaOmer, the 49 days between the sacrifice and the 2 loaves of wheat offering on the holiday of Shavuot. And I'm pointing over here, we do have 2 loaves of wheat bread in compliance with the word. And just as a final thought, Omer should not be confused with Homer, which is a much larger unit of volume for liquids. I can't make this stuff up. That was in Wikipedia. The Shavuot offering. The highlight of the Shavuot offerings were the Shatai Halechem, the 2 loaves. We have a scriptural Shavuot offering. 2 loaves, wheat bread. Leaven wheat bread. Which made the newly harvested crop permissible from then on for meal offerings in the Beit HaMikdash. Everyone knows what the Beit HaMikdash is. It's the house of sanctification, aka the temple. Each of the loaves were made of 1/10 of an ephah, approximately 5 pounds of very fine wheat flour, unlike all other meal offerings which were brought as matzah, unleavened bread, except the 10 loaves of the Tadah, the Thanksgiving offering. We all know Tadah means thanks, right? The 2 loaves of Shavuot were baked as chemetz, as leavened bread, and they were made out of wheat. So far in this scriptural year, this sanctified year starting with Abib, We've had an offering of unleavened bread made with barley. We've had a sheaf offering of barley. And then we get to Shavuot, and then we have, after we counted all of the omers, we have an offering of 2 loaves of leavened bread made of wheat. So we're kind of covering the agricultural community here. You know, barley ripens first, then we get the wheat. And then if we look at the commandment that says there are 3 feasts, there's the fall feast of Sukkot, the ingathering, the fall harvest, and that's all the other crops. So we make a complete circle of harvesting and offerings of the agricultural world. Okay, when do we observe Shavuot? When do we observe Shavuot? Well, here again, the world opinion has injected confusion into the plain word of Yahweh. Some observe according to one mind, and another has another opinion. And if you ask someone else, they probably have a third opinion, or the saying goes, you ask 2 rabbis, you get 5 opinions. When do we observe Shavuot? It's all about the counting of the Omer. And when do we start? Well, we're going to go back to that magnificent source of information, Wikipedia. And they've actually done a pretty good job here. They only left one of the factions out, one of the major factions, but it says, in regard to counting the Omer, the Karaite Jews and the Israelite Samaritans begin counting the Omer on the day after the weekly Sabbath during the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Passover, rather than on the second day of... Oh, I see. They're defining the Feast of Unleavened Bread as Passover. Rather than on the second day of Passover, the 16th of Nisan. There are several reasons the Jews, or the rabbinical Jews, the Pharisees, the tradition of the Pharisees, they celebrate the starting of the counting of the Omer, or the wave sheaf offering, on the second day of Passover. You see, they've combined Passover and unleavened bread into one holiday. And they started on the 15th of Nisan, rather than having Passover on the 14th of Nisan, which is what Scripture says, and then starting unleavened bread on the 15th of Nisan. They start their whole group of Passover on the 15th of Nisan, and then they offer the wave sheaf offering on the 16th of Nisan. There are several reasons for this. On the one hand, Shavuot is the only holiday for which the date is not expressly given in Torah. Instead, the Torah tells us to determine the date of Shavuot by counting 50 days from the morrow after the Sabbath until the morrow after the seventh Sabbath. That's in Leviticus 23. Let's turn to Leviticus 23. There's a lot of stuff in there. Leviticus 23, verses 15 and 16. Where it says, "You shall also count for yourselves from the day after the Sabbath, from the day when you brought in the sheaf of the wave offering, there shall be seven complete Sabbaths. You shall count 50 days to the day after the seventh Sabbath, then you shall present a new grain offering to Yahweh." And that's not a new grain offering, that's an offering of new grain. Not barley, that's wheat. And it's also new because it just ripened. So I'm just saying. The morrow after the seventh Sabbath. Okay. A difference between Karaites or Samaritans and Rabbinites. Rabbinites. Doesn't that sound ominous? We're talking about Pharisaical tradition and rabbinical Judaism and all of that. We'll just call them Rabbinites. Is the understanding of morrow after the Sabbath. Rabbinites take the Sabbath as the first day of Passover, although Passover is never referred to as a Sabbath in the Torah. Contrarily, the Karaites and the Samaritans interpret this Sabbath to be the first weekly Sabbath that falls during Passover. Let me correct Wikipedia here. The first weekly Sabbath that falls during unleavened bread. As a result, the Karaite and the Samaritan Shavuot is always on a Sunday, although the actual Hebrew date varies, which complements the fact that a specific date is never given for Shavuot in the Torah, the only holiday for which this is the case. The counting of Karaites and Rabbinites coincides when the first day of Passover is on Shabbat. Because the date of the Samaritan Passover usually differs from the Jewish one, often by as much as a month, the Karaite and Samaritan counting rarely coincides. Okay, we understand the differences now, but we also understand that somebody's not clearly reading their scripture. But they almost got everybody involved. Let's don't forget the Essenes. The Essenes do things differently. The Essenes saw what was happening between the Sadducees, the Karaites, the Samaritans, and the Rabbinites, and they thought, we don't need any of that controversy. What we'll do is make the wave sheaf offering the day after the end of unleavened bread. So they're off by a whole week from everybody else. So just thought I'd share that with you. Shavuot is said to be the anniversary of receiving Torah at Mount Sinai, the day that Yahweh changed our lives forever. Is that true? The timing's good. 50 days after leaving Egypt, they were given the Torah? Yeah, could be. And giving Israel a way to guide them through the times ahead. I think that could be. We also see Shavuot observed by Yahshua and the apostles, recorded in Acts chapter 2. Let's read that one too. Acts chapter 2. We can find Acts, yeah. We'll just read verses 1 through 13. When the day of Pentecost, oh, I forgot to mention, Shavuot is also called Pentecost. That's a Latin-Greek translation from, I don't know. It's also called Pentecost. Had come, and they were all together in one place. And suddenly, there came from heaven a noise like a violent rushing wind, and it filled the whole house where they were sitting. And there appeared to them tongues as of fire, distributing themselves, and they rested on each of them. And they were all filled with the Ruach HaKodesh, and began to speak with other tongues, as the Spirit was giving them utterance. Now there were Jews living in Jerusalem, devout men from every nation under heaven. And when this sound occurred, the crowd came together, and they were bewildered because each one of them was hearing them speak in his own language. And they were amazed and astonished, saying, Why are not all these who are speaking Galileans? And how is it that we each hear them in our own language to which we were born? Parthians and Medes and Elamites and residents of Mesopotamia and Judea and Cappadocia and Pontus and Asia, Phrygia, Pamphylia, Egypt and the districts of Libya around Cyrene and visitors from Rome, both Jews and proselytes. Cretans and Arabs, we hear them in their own tongue speaking of the mighty deeds of Elohim. And they all continued in amazement with great perplexity, saying to one another, what does this mean? But others were mocking and saying, they're full of sweet wine. Does it mean? Well, obviously, Yahshua and his followers were observing Shavuot as they should. But during this specific Shavuot recorded in Acts, there was loud wind, there was fire. Oh, wait, when the Torah was given on Mount Sinai, there was loud wind and fire. What does that mean? Could it be the presence of Yahweh? Could be. Probably is. Yahweh has shown himself as fire before, burning bushes and such. Could it be it was a demonstration of his attention to his people in both cases? Tongues. What's this talk about tongues? Everyone was talking in languages that they were not born to, and the foreigners were hearing everything in their own language. Maybe that was so there would not be a misunderstanding. You know, I've talked to people from Germany, and I've talked to people from Mexico and France, and there's little differences in the languages. And if they're trying to speak to an English speaker, I think sometimes something gets lost. There's a little confusion. But if everybody can communicate what Yahweh had to say to the people in their own language, the chance for confusion would be minimized. Well, just so we understand that the author of confusion has a part in everything, we go to Wikipedia again to see what the world thinks of Pentecost. Where it says, the churchianity holiday of Pentecost. I inserted churchianity in there. Celebrated on the 50th day after Easter, commemorates the descent of the Holy Spirit upon the apostles and other followers of JC while they were in Jerusalem celebrating the Feast of Weeks. They didn't call it Shavuot. As described in the Acts of the Apostles, chapter 2. Some Christians believe this event represents the birth of the church. The holy day is also called White Sunday or Whit Sunday, especially in the United Kingdom, where traditionally the next day, Whit Monday, was also a public holiday, now fixed by statute on the last Monday in May. In Eastern Christianity, Pentecost can also refer to the entire 50 days of Easter, through Pentecost inclusive. Hence, the book containing the liturgical text for Paschaltide is called the Pentecostarian. The date of Pentecost depends on the date of Easter. It is therefore called a movable feast. In Germany, Pentecost is denominated Pfingsten and often coincides with scholastic holidays and the beginning of many outdoor and springtime activities, such as festivals and organized outdoor activities by youth organizations. The Monday after Pfingsten is a legal holiday in many European nations. Isn't it amazing what happens when we ignore the plain word of Yahweh and take upon ourselves to determine what's right and what's good in our own mind. Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 26. Starting with verse 1. Where it says, then it shall be, when you enter the land which Yahweh your Elohim gives you as an inheritance, and you possess it and live in it, that you shall take some of the first of all the produce of the ground which you bring in from your land that Yahweh your Elohim gives you, and you shall put it in a basket and go to the place where Yahweh your Elohim chooses to establish his name. You shall go to the priest who is in the office at that time and say to him, I declare this day to Yahweh my Elohim that I have entered the land which Yahweh swore to our fathers to give us. Then the priest shall take the basket from your hand and set it down before the altar of Yahweh your Elohim. You shall answer and say before Yahweh your Elohim, my father was a wandering Aramean, and he went down to Egypt and sojourned there, few in number, but there he became a great, mighty, and populous nation. And the Egyptians treated us harshly and afflicted us and imposed hard labor on us. Then we cried to Yahweh, the Elohim of our fathers, and Yahweh heard our voice and saw our afflictions and our toil and our oppression. And Yahweh brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm, and with great terror and with great signs and wonder. And he had brought us to this place, has given us this land, a land flowing with milk and honey. Now behold, I have brought the first of the produce of the ground, which you, Yahweh, have given me. And you shall set it down before Yahweh your Elohim, and worship before Yahweh your Elohim. And you and the Levite and the alien who is among you shall rejoice in all the good which Yahweh your Elohim has given you and your household. When you have finished praying all the tithe of your increase in the third, when you have finished paying all the tithe of your increase in the third year, the year of tithing, then you shall give it to the Levite, to the stranger, to the orphan, and to the widow, that they may eat in your towns and be satisfied. You shall say before Yahweh your Elohim, I have removed the sacred portion from my house, and also have given it to the Levite and the alien and the orphan and the widow, according to all your commandments which you have commanded me. I have not transgressed or forgotten any of your commandments. I have not eaten of it while mourning, nor have I removed any of it while I was unclean, nor offered any of it to the dead. I have listened to the voice of Yahweh my Elohim. I have done according to all that you have commanded me. Look down from your holy habitation from heaven and bless your people Israel and the ground which you have given us, a land flowing with milk and honey, as you swore to our fathers. This day, Yahweh your Elohim commands you to do these statutes and ordinances. You shall therefore be careful to do them with all your heart and with all your soul. You have today declared Yahweh to be your Elohim, and that you would walk in his ways and keep his statutes, his commandments, his ordinances, and listen to his voice. Yahweh has today declared you to be his people, a treasured possession, as he promised you, and that you should keep all his commandments, and that he will set you high above all nations, which he has made for praise, fame, and honor, and that you shall be a consecrated people to Yahweh your Elohim, as he has spoken. Those are powerful words. That's a commitment. As the brother said yesterday, have you examined the cost? Do you know the cost of your relationship with your Creator? Well, it was just outlined in that passage. Do you know the rewards of your relationship with your Creator? It was outlined there too. He will set you high above all nations which he has made. Chag Shavuot Sameach. that we should remember what our relationship is with Elohim, with our Elohim, with Yahweh Elohim. That we should honor and commit to sharing that relationship with others. Sharing with others that Yahweh is Elohim. And that Yahshua is his son. His son that has come to set right that which was fallen and to make things as they were to have been. Even so, Yahshua, come. Hallelujah.